Welcome to The Secrets of Success. By following the proven techniques of the guests who appear on this series, you'll learn that even successful people run into detours and failures, and how you can apply their success techniques to change your life.
You're now listening to the most unique show on radio, the show dedicated to making you a success. Want to be the best and get away from the rest? Let's find out what great brands do with our guest, author Denise Lee Yan. Denise, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Denise, most of us think of a brand as an advertising or a marketing technique or a box with, you know, a tall building on or something. Are we thinking in the right direction or are we off base?
Well, that's part of what a brand represents. But the more complete view of a brand is that it is the bundle of values and attributes that represent the value that you create for your customers and employees and other people that are involved with your company. So instead of being an external image, as you had kind of described, a brand is much more than that.
Now, you talk about something called the value-creating potential of brands, and you say this must be released. Can you translate that into language we can understand?
Sure. Okay. Creating value. Brands create value for different people or groups that are involved with the organization or company behind the brand. For example, a brand creates value for customers who buy the company's products or services because it helps them make decisions about whether or not to buy it, which one to buy, how much they should pay for it, and whether that product or service is really right for them or not. So there is a value that a brand creates for customers. But more importantly, a brand creates value for the company itself by enabling the company to charge a higher price point because customers want their product or service. That brand has created value for the company. It also creates value for investors, distributors, suppliers as well. But those are the two main groups that a brand creates value for.
Now, is a brand, for instance, McDonald's, or is a brand McDonald's Big Mac?
Both, I would say. In the case of McDonald's, the brand is the corporate entity. And then in the case of the Big Mac, the brand is the product. So a company can actually own and manage several brands. For example, Procter & Gamble owns Tide, Pampers, Oil of Olay, a bunch of other brands, and yet Procter & Gamble itself as a company is a brand.
Now, just to give our listeners an idea, because you're talking about brands, but boy, you really know your stuff when you talk about them. You've actually worked for some of the top companies that we would recognize and that are really into this. Could you give us an example of a couple of the companies you've worked with or for?
Sure. I've worked with world-class brands such as Sony, Frito-Lay, Burger King, Oakley. I feel like I'm name-dropping, but I've really had the honor of working on some of the world's greatest brands and learning how they built such valuable, powerful brands.
So you have really worked, obviously, just from those names, you've seen, obviously, companies that we know right off the bat, we recognize their names, and just what they've done to build up that name and to get where they've gotten to the point where you can just say their name and right away we will immediately recognize it.
Yes, I've also worked with smaller companies and emerging brands, and those you wouldn't necessarily have heard of or have heard of yet, but companies and organizations of all sizes, of all types, of all scopes, can and often do build great brands.
Now, I guess after listening to what you've just said, my image where a brand might be a type of logo or a trademark, that's really not the case. So if I think of Starbucks, I think of that little trademark that you see on all their cups, or I think it's a trademark, a little symbol, I'll say. But that's not really the brand, is it?
No, it isn't. And in fact, I would ask you, if you are a Starbucks fan, do you like Starbucks because of their logo? Probably not, right? I mean,
right.
It's a cool logo and everything,
yeah.
Right? But you, if you're like the millions of other people who like Starbucks, the brand is the experience that you get when you go into the store. It's the friendliness and the genuine welcome and hospitality of the baristas. It's the great products they have and all the like kind of inventive coffee drinks that they offer. It's the way that the stores are designed so that they're comfortable, so that you can meet up with friends there or work, get some work done when you need to. The brand is all of those attributes and all of those elements, and the logo just serves as a symbol of that brand.
Can a brand, excuse me, can a brand be something that's perceived rather than something that actually exists? And just to go further, and when you answered the previous question, I'm thinking that if I go out and buy a very expensive watch, I may feel like the king of the universe wearing that watch. You, on the other hand, may not even know whether I have the cheapest watch, a knockoff, or that, we'll use the name, a Rolex watch, for instance.
Right.
But I right. perceive it as making me cool or a big shot
yes.
or a
yes.
famous person. So is that part of the branding experience?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, certainly great brands often convey a certain status or, you know, level of luxury or style. You know, that's part of what the symbol represents. But Rolex has to have had been a great watch, you know, the exquisite design and detail of the watchmaking that goes into creating the great quality timepieces that Rolex is known for. If they didn't do that, they wouldn't, the brand, you know, and the little, whether you have a sweeping secondhand or not, you know, those cues, none of that would mean anything if they didn't have the real experience behind the symbol of the brand.
Denise, we'd just like to remind our audience, if they did not hear at the beginning of the show, our guest today is Denise Lee Yon, spelled Y-O-H-N. Her book is called What Great Brands Do, the brand building principles that separate the best from the rest. And Denise, where is this available?
It's available at all major retailers and e-tailers. And you can also find out more information about the book, as well as download some key content from the book on my website, whatgreatbrandsdo.com.
Easy enough to remember. And again, the spelling of your last name is Y-O-H-N. And as you said, it's just like John with a Y.
You got it.
Easy enough to remember. And of course, we'll give our audience that information again a little later in the show. How would you qualify a brand as great? If I come up to you and say, oh, this is a great brand, you being an expert might say, no, it's not. Maybe, Bill, maybe you like that shirt or you like that car, but the brand really isn't a great brand. What qualifies it? How are they scored?
Right. In my research, I came up with several criteria to qualify a brand to be included in my book or not, because there is some degree of subjectivity, but I tried to create some metrics that would level the playing field. And one of the most important metrics was the profit margin that the companies were able to generate. When you have a strong brand, generally speaking, people are willing to pay more for what you're offering compared to a competitor's. So most great brands enjoy higher profit margins than the average of their category. I also looked at things like the financial value that can be attributed to the brand by organizations like Interbrand that publishes the Best Global Brands list in Business Week and other organizations like that. They actually, through a sophisticated formula, denote how much that brand is worth to the company, so that if you were involved in like a merger or acquisition, how much premium would you be paying in order to get that brand? And then I looked at consumer surveys, things like the Brand Asset Valuator study that is conducted by Y&R, an advertising agency, where they survey thousands of consumers around the world about the brand, about different brands and how they perceive them. And the ones that were at the top of the list also made my cut for qualifying a great brand.
So there's really a lot more detail about brands than we even could conceive before we listened to you speak.
Well, there's a real science behind building a great brand that I think people are sometimes surprised about. You know, they wield a lot of influence on our, on people's purchase decisions, but I think that not a lot of people understand how does that happen. And it's really because when a great brand, it's really because great brands implement the principles that I've outlined in my book, What Great Brands Do, that enables them to have this power that we just kind of almost take for granted.
Now, you mentioned about the different ratings. Is there a number one brand in the world, or one that's kind of thought of as the best on almost all lists, or it's always number one or two?
Sure. Well, according to some of the valuation lists that I mentioned, the ones that are based on the financial value of the brand to the corporation, Apple is usually at the top of the list. So are brands like Google, IBM, Microsoft, McDonald's. Kind of some of the, what I would maybe consider to be the usual suspects. They're both the brands that represent this great financial value to companies and also are very popular among buyers, whether we be consumers or business buyers.
Do the same branding rules apply now? Those names that you threw out there, just by the mere fact that we all recognize them, we know those are worldwide companies and they're enormous. But do those same rules apply to, you know, Freddy's Meatball Restaurant and Eddie's Auto Parts or Jennifer the Accountant in our local town?
Well, absolutely. I would ask you, you know, would you go to an Eddie's Auto Parts based on their brand name or not? It depends on whether you've heard of them before and what you associate with their brand. I think what's important to acknowledge is that a brand is relevant and can be very valuable for companies of all sizes. That's why in my book, What Great Brands Do, I profile a range of brands, companies within a range of sizes. So, for example, Shake Shack, many of your listeners are probably familiar with that chain that's based in New York, but outside of the Northeast, it's not a known brand. But it's still a small and emerging brand, but the company leaders have implemented many of the principles that I speak about in my book, and that's what has enabled them to inspire such a loyal following that anytime you see a line in Manhattan, it's probably because you're right around the corner from a Shake Shack.
Now, you know what you did to me? You put Shake Shack in the back of my mind. And subconsciously,
and now you're going to have one, right?
I am, and it's just going to start eating away at me, and I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night thinking of the Shake Shack, and within the next 24 hours, you just made a new customer for the, not a new customer because I've been in there before, but you just got me back in there. A survey says something like 64% of people say brands do not influence their decision. Are they lying, or do they just not know that they're being influenced?
Well, actually, that survey was among marketing directors that said that those brands aren't influencing decisions at their companies. And what I was trying to convey by relaying that statistic is that oftentimes business leaders will say, we want to have a great brand, and they will try to develop their brand by running an advertising campaign or refreshing their logo so that's cool and contemporary. But the brand isn't really impacting any other aspect of their business. And as a result, the brand doesn't become great because it's just a outward shell or face to the company, whereas, you know, customers can easily see through that veneer. So it's really about, so the real challenge is for companies, for business leaders, to make their brands more than just messages that they're projecting externally, but use them as management tools to guide everything they do internally.
Denise, we want to find out more about what great brands do, but at this point in the show, we have to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Secrets of Success. My name is Bill Horan. If you'd like a free digital copy of today's show, you can go to itunes.ncc.edu. The show is produced at WHPC, 90.3 FM at Nassau Community College. We'll be right back after this brief intermission.
Hi, we want to tell you about a program with real appeal. There is a high-quality, low-cost paralegal studies program right here at Nassau Community College.
It can be your major while earning your associate's degree.
Or taken as a certificate program if you already have a 2 or 4 year college degree.
It can be the start of your legal career or a great second career.
It is also a great credential in the business world.
Many of our paralegal graduates go on to 4 year colleges and even law school.
You can complete the certificate program in several months. Paralegals work in private law firms, government, and corporations on Long Island and New York City.
You can start in the summer, fall, and winter, attend full or part-time, days, nights, or weekends.
Our tuition is low, and the program is approved by the American Bar Association.
For more information, contact the Paralegal Program at 516-572-7774 or email us at paralegal@ncc.edu.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Secrets of Success. I'm your host, Bill Horan. And today we're speaking with author Denise Lee Yan, author of What Great Brands Do. Denise, you have something that you call your brand as business approach. What is that?
Sure. It's a management approach that great brands implement where they don't see a distinction between their brand and their business. They're one and the same. So the values and attributes and real purpose that define your brand are the same things that drive your business and vice versa.
So as an example of that, would it be that some businesses have those signs up all around, the customer is number one, the customer comes first. And then when you come in there, they don't talk to you, they don't answer the phone, and they say, we're closing, come back tomorrow.
Yes, you know, my favorite cartoon is one where, you know, there's a guy that's like apparently been on telephone hold for hours listening to a recording saying, your call is important to us. Well, you know, a brand is not what you say, it's what you do. And that's why great brands don't see a difference between their brand and their business.
Now, I have to tell our audience, just as I read through, you have the seven brand building, I have trouble getting that phrase out, brand building principles, but just going through them, it's really enlightening, and you start to think of the businesses you do business with or want to, and obviously you're right with each of them. These are the things that make you want to come back to deal with that particular brand, the reason why we know names like Apple and IBM and McDonald's, because there's something about them we like, and it's more than just the hamburger or the computer or the product they sell.
Right. Yeah, one of the principles I talk about in my book is that great brands avoid selling products.
Now, I thought I misread that. I have to tell you, when I first saw that, I said, wait, Denise forgot something in here. But then I went back and said, yeah, that's what you said. So great brands avoid, right? Avoid?
Yes. Selling products.
You're going to have to explain that.
Everyone asked me about that because it is, you know, obviously we are in a business where there is an exchange of money for something. But what great brands understand is that their products or their services represent something much more meaningful and valuable than the actual thing that they're selling. And the example I'll use here is Nike. You know, Nike doesn't really sell running shoes. I mean, yes, I go to the store, I pick out the shoe, I pay the money for it. But what I'm buying into when I buy Nike is that sense of that I'm an athlete and that I can achieve my goals and that Nike somehow inspires me to just do it, right? And so great brands make an emotional connection and they seek out those emotional connections more than they're actually selling their product. And that's why they don't necessarily tout product features and attributes so much as create this feeling that you want to be a part of.
I see what you mean, but it's definitely caught me by surprise when you said that. And as I said, I had to go back and read it a few times. Now, something else that was just about as much of a confusion for me, another one of the principles says great brands ignore trends.
Yes.
Now, I thought that's something big, that they have to stay cool. They have to stay on top of things. In fact, they have to be ahead of the trend. But you say they ignore them.
Right. You know, there's a I think there's a common belief that following trends is the way, as you said, to make your brand relevant and to keep current and to keep a message fresh. But following the trend is just that. It's following. And great brands lead. They are identifying out on the far horizon ideas, movements, different trajectories of the way our culture is shaping, and they actually advance them so that they are leading a cultural movement as opposed to following other people. So as a business leader, your challenge is to not see what everyone else is doing and then jump on that bandwagon, but it's to ask yourself, what is going out there in the culture that we can actually create as our own bandwagon that everyone else wants to jump on? A good example of this is Chipotle Mexican Grill. Chipotle got founded back in the, the late 1980s, 1990s. And at the time, everyone else in the fast food industry was kind of in a race to the bottom with low prices. In fact, Taco Bell's 59, 79, 99 cent menu was introduced at that time. But Steve Ells, the founder of Chipotle, decided that he wanted to do something different. So rather than following the trend of cheap fast food, he went the other direction. He decided to offer a higher quality fare of Mexican food made with fresh ingredients, made right in front of you at the time that you order it, in a restaurant environment that was several steps above what most fast food restaurants offered at that time, by friendly employees. And in doing so, he created this whole movement that has now become fast casual restaurants, where you see everything from a Panera Bread to something like a Shake Shack, where it's fast food, yes, but it's a higher standard of fast food. That's what great brands do. They actually advance movements to their own advantage.
Now, another one of the principles, you say they don't chase customers. Isn't that why they're doing all this, to get those customers to keep ringing the cash register, come in the door, buy another shake or another burrito?
Mm-hmm. Sure. In my research, I found that great brands are very interested in certain customers and not very interested and could care less about some others. They, instead of chasing customers, they attract customers to them, customers who share their values and who are somewhat like-minded. A good example of this is Red Bull, the energy drink. You know, when Red Bull was introduced, the founder of that brand, and I may mispronounce his name because I've been practicing this, but I'm not sure I've got it right, Dietrich Mateschitz, I believe is his name. When he started the brand, he wanted to position the brand as being very premium, ultra premium, in a category all of its own. And one of the ways that he did that is to create a brand personality that was somewhat alienating. There's a quote that he has that I love that says that it was important to him that high school teachers hated his brand as much as their students loved it. And that's what I mean by great brands don't chase customers. They're not interested in having everyone buy their products. They're only interested in those who really feel an affinity for the brand and really value what the brand stands for.
Denise, once again, I want our audience to know that if they didn't hear your name before, you're Denise Lee, L-E-E, last name Y-O-H-N, What Great Brands Do. And what's the website again?
It's whatgreatbrandsdo.com. And try to make it easy for everyone.
You did. And, you know, as you're saying all these things, I'm saying, my gosh, you're right. I was thinking recently when I was looking to get someone a gift at different hoodies, they, you know, the sweatshirts with the hood on them, they range from, I think, about $12 to $60.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically a sweatshirt with a hood, not too different. And I'm looking at them saying, I've got to buy one of the better ones because these are the cool ones. Yet
right.
I could have bought four of the cheaper ones for the same price as the cool one, yet it didn't make me feel good. I knew the person I was going to give it to wouldn't wear it. They would take it back. And I guess that's company who prices it four or five times higher is good at their branding.
Absolutely. That's the advantage that great brands enjoy.
Now, finally, I got one of them right. I came across, I don't know which number this is in your list of seven principles, but you say great brands sweat the small stuff. That makes sense, but explain it to us.
Sure. You know, great brands may think big and have big visions and aspirations, but they sweat the small stuff in the details of their customer experiences. They know that every interaction that a customer has with them is an opportunity to either enhance their brand image or detract and diminish it. And so they design each of those touch points, those interactions, to be something that's exceptional and memorable and distinctive. And so as a retailer, sweating the small stuff means thinking about every aspect of your store design, the layout of your store, the materials you use in the store, the types of employees you hire, the types of uniforms they wear, the way they greet the employees, greet the customers, the fixtures in your store, the signage in your store. Every little aspect is attended to because it's intended to express the brand and communicate certain brand values. An example that I'll draw upon is Chobani yogurt. Chobani became the top-selling yogurt in the U.S. in 3 short years, in part because its leader, Hamdi Yusulaya, was sweating the small stuff. He knew that he needed to make his product exceptional, and so he used packaging design to really make his product stand out. He was obsessive about all the details of the packaging so that it communicated a quality, special product. And by sweating the small stuff, as I said, he was able to achieve significant results.
Denise, as I'm listening to your answers, now I see why this could apply to that little gas station in town, that pizzeria, or that accountant's office. And I think for any of our listeners, if you have any type of business or you're working for any type of business, what great brands do, the 7 brand building principles that separate the best from the rest, you'll see how obvious it is. You'll tie in Denise's answers and realize why we like the McDonald's and the Apples more than a lot of the competition. Denise, once again, I'm going to ask you for the name of that website.
Sure, it's whatgreatbrandsdo.com.
Easy to remember by our guest, Denise Lee Yon, spelled Y-O-H-N. Thanks so much for being with us today, Denise, and for illuminating the brand positions and what we should know about them. And we'd like to remind our audience that if you'd like to receive a free digital copy of today's show, you can go to itunes.ncc.edu. This program is produced at the studios of WHPC, 90.3 FM at Nassau Community College. We ask you to please join us again next week at the same time when we'll continue our journey to success.